I've really been anxious to talk to you all. I felt like we closed the year on a high note. Some good things happening, and I'm anxious just to follow up on that. As always, anything that either of you would like to talk about before I get started?
Rob, we're off to a great start. We've closed on two hybrid insurance policies. We have one that we have another insurance policy that we have issued. Another insurance policy that we got permission from the client. We're filling out all the paperwork for them now. And then we have another one that's I think the client will okay within a couple of days. We'll be able to get that one going as well. So, we're off to a great start. We have accounts coming last night from a client asking me if I take referrals. And so, we're off to a great start. I'm really optimistic, and, I think that we're going to achieve our goals. And it's everything so far so good, knock on wood. 11 days or 12 days in, and we're up and running, and things are working out. So I'm very happy.
One day at a time, all you can control is your activity. You can't control results. You can only control your activity, and that sounds like what you're doing. Am I right?
Yeah. We're up and running, and I have to say that I feel like we're running at 100%. The two of us are on the same page, and we're really tackling issues as they're coming up, and we're in good shape. So,
how did you respond? Two questions around the person who asked if you took referrals. Number one, how did you answer them?
I said, yes, I do. Thank you very much. And then I asked them, is it your friend or relative? And he said, it's an associate of his from Rotary. And I said, I might know them. I'm a Rotarian. What's their names? And so he told me. And
yeah.
I don't know them. But I went on and I looked them up on LinkedIn. And it looks like a good prospect. It looks like a 70-year-old man that's retired, and he looks like a good prospect.
All right. My second question around that is, why do you – did anything happen that caused him to ask that question? Had you had a good meeting? Had he complimented you on something? Why do you think he asked you if you took referrals?
So he's been a client now for 2 or 3 years, and I actually met him through Rotary, and I think that I know that he's happy with the new service model. He said that he's complimented many times, and I've done the last time I spoke to him. I did VIPSA with him, and which kind of aids the question why would he ask if I did referrals, but I did do VIPSA with him, and then he responded, like almost a month later, saying, "Hey, do you still take referrals? Are you, I've got somebody that I think would, that's looking for a financial advisor." So.
All right, now let's go back and revisit something. Everything's perfect so far. When somebody says, "I've got someone, I think you should get in front of, or you should be doing business with my, my brother-in-law, my friend from Rotary or whatever," then the first thing you do is you confirm. Well, I'd love to work with friends of yours or whatever. And then the key question is, if you were me, how would you go about getting in front of them? Remember that? I mean, that's way early in Supernova. But what you're looking for, I mean, you can go through the Rotarian diary and find names. What you're looking for, Paul, is favorable introductions.
Right.
So the question would be, you've done everything perfectly. It's all rolling. It feels really good. It's If you were me, how would you go about getting in front of them? Well, he and I have coffee every Thursday, or he and I do this, or he and I have lunch, or, you know, whatever. But you want to keep that going because you've had a lot of people over your career say, I'm going to introduce you by so-and-so, whatever, and that never happens. So you with me on that?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay. All right.
Now that same, under that same, can I ask one more question, or do you want to move on?
I'm here for you.
So what I have noticed is that we've increased, you know, exponentially, I think Suzanne would agree, that we've increased getting referrals, but a lot of the referrals are like butlers. Children, mm-hmm. you know, and they're not our prime referral, but we're taking them anyways. You know, any thoughts or we're doing the VIPSA and the clients turn around and they're giving us their son, they're giving but their daughter, the son and daughters don't really, you know, they're about my age or less. And so we're not really, they don't have enough of a nest egg to really, you know, be a full bona fide client. And so, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, some strong thoughts.
Okay.
Give me the first name of the person who asked you if you took referrals.
So, you know, this most recent one is Maureen. Maureen is a client, and she's referring her nephew.
Okay. All right.
But he's a young, you know, he's like 20-some years old, you know?
Yeah, you don't have, it's not that you're being a snob here. It's you only have so much time in the day, and you've got to save a lot of time for your existing clients. You can't just keep bringing in people because it pretty quickly, if you took everybody, you would lose your ability to provide a premium level of service. Are you in agreement with that?
Yes.
Okay. So let's go back when Maureen asks, did you roll Supernova out, your new service model with Maureen?
I did, yes.
Okay. Did you tell her you had a minimum?
Yes.
Okay. So she comes. Let's go back and revisit the guy who asked you if you took referrals, and he says, "Now keep in mind you've got a minimum, and keep in mind why you have a minimum. You can never let the growth of your practice compromise the service you're giving to your existing clients, and you always want to have room in your practice for people who fit your ideal client model. So keep that in the computer in your head. Okay, this guy says, do you still take referrals? How do you answer that?
Yes, I do.
Your answer is, I take clients who fit my ideal service model. I'm being your client here. As you remember, when I rolled out my new service model, I also have a minimum, and the reason I have that minimum is so I never compromise the service that I'm giving to existing clients. Do you think that this gentleman, who he's going to refer to you, meet your ideal client model? I mean, that can sound a little bit. What's the right word? Snooty or whatever, if you let it. In reality, you are running a practice that only has so many seats, and again, I'll go back and say it again, I can never let the service I give to my existing clients be compromised by people who don't fit my ideal client model. Now, your ideal, your minimum is, as I look here, is 500, right?
Yes.
Okay. So, are you comfortable if you had it to do over again, this Rotarian, are you comfortable having that conversation? Do you take referrals? Well, I do, but as you remember, when I rolled out my upgraded service model, I have a minimum for new business.
So I was thinking, like, it's better, it's almost better. You tell me if I'm wrong. Like, I'm thinking, like, you know, in that scenario, there's no way my clients, I mean, it's unlikely my client is going to know what the situation is with this fellow he's referring. You know, he's not going to know how much money he has.
Yeah.
So isn't it better for me to say, you know, sure, let me meet him and let me talk to him and let me see if he meets my, you know, let me see if he and I are a good match for each other.
Exactly right.
If the client.
But what you'll weed out here is people who know somebody doesn't meet that. For example,
right.
You may
Let's switch. So there's two referrals that I was talking about. One is from Maureen. The other one is from Norman. Norman is referring the other Rotarian. Maureen is referring her nephew, who's 21 years old. Go ahead, Suzanne.
Oh, I just wanted to ask a clarification question about Maureen and her nephew. While he's 20 years old, if he's the beneficiary or 50% of her assets when she passes away, does that change the situation?
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
Yes, it does.
Okay.
So here's
good question.
It's a great question.
He is.
I think I got a great answer. You're always governed by common sense. Right now, and I'm looking in your folder, you have around 50 clients.
Yeah.
You have the capacity to add more.
Right.
So how much does Maureen have with you?
Just about $1 million.
Okay. And he's going to be a beneficiary of that money.
I don't think Maureen is pretty young. I mean, I think she's probably mid 50s. She's not she has no children of her own. She's single. And this is her nephew, who's her sister's son, who she loves.
Okay.
She adores him.
So he
inherited. So Maureen's mother died. She left Maureen $10,000 to give to him. Now Maureen, her advice to him when she gave it to him, she said, "Hey, what are you gonna do with this money?" He said, "I don't know." So, well, why don't you put it in an IRA for yourself and save it for retirement? I know a guy that does that. Let me get you in touch with Paul. And that's how it all came to be.
What I'm noticing is that
I'm getting a lot of that. I'm getting a lot of, you know, in my I'm getting a lot of that. And, you know, another client of ours, the Smith, very different situation. Well, not that much different of a situation, but very different. Different people. The Smiths have a son. He's the district attorney in Los Angeles. You know, he's my age and has children. I don't know what his situation is, but I know he's he's on his way to us too. You know, I know that he's according to his parents, he should be calling us any day now. So, in my mind, you know, if I follow the formula, you know, it seems to me like Max, who's a 20-year-old, you know, maybe I should, there's a part of me that says, well, you know, there's a good chance maybe I shouldn't work with him. But then to Suzanne's point, well, he is the beneficiary of one of my clients, and she's a million-dollar client.
Is she in a position to give you more referrals?
Yes, and she has given me her cousin, who's also a very good client too, Yep. Not quite a million, but getting there. And
okay.
She's given me her cousin as well. So, you know, she has given me other referrals.
Well, your minimum, see, you have to be consistent. If you tell your clients that you got a minimum of a half a million, and then you take a $10,000, you know, like Marine's nephew, it sends a confusing message. So remember, again, going back to early in Supernova, my minimum is a half a million dollars unless there are extenuating circumstances.
Yes.
If somebody's got $75,000, but they're retiring next month and are going to have a $3 million rollover, that's an extenuating circumstance. So that
sure.
gives you the consistency. So going back to Marine's nephew, is you say something along the lines of, as you probably remember when I made this upgrade to my service model, I set a minimum for new business. And as I said, my minimum is a half a million dollars unless there are extenuating circumstances. Being that this young man is, Marine is your nephew, I'm happy to take care to bring him into my practice. You can't just
right.
bring him in without having that conversation, because she's going to bring you somebody else with $10,000.
Yeah,
and we
yeah.
so
exactly.
That's how you can deliver the service model you deliver, by not taking everybody. And I'll tell you a story that I probably have told you, but never hesitate to cut me off if you've heard it. But that lady out in Colorado who worked for UBS had just raised her minimum from 250 to 500. She got a call from a referral source, and he said, "I've got somebody I think you'd get along with. What's your minimum?" And instead of saying 500, she didn't want to look like she was being uppity, so she said 250. His response: "It's that little." So your minimum says a lot about your practice. I mean, it was a great question. Number one, you got to use common sense. Number two, if you make an exception, it has to truly be, I mean, the continuating circumstance that you've got a referral source and a good client who's led you to other good clients who that's not a violation of your minimum. Extenuating circumstance. You with me?
Yeah, I agree. I just didn't know how to organize it in my own thoughts, but that's it. That's how I organize it. Yeah.
That's, you know, you always get back, you always focus on the client.
Right.
The reason that you have gone through this process to tighten up your practice, to establish the minimum, is so you can deliver on the service model that they all love. Make
right.
sense? Okay.
Yes, it does.
Suzanne, did I answer your question? I took a long time to do it. I hope I did.
No, yes. That was, it seemed like an extenuating circumstance.
It is in that case. Okay, I want to, let's see, let me go, I'm going to skip ahead here. I sent you an email the other day, probably Sunday night or yesterday, I forget which. And it's got, what is your brand?
Yes.
Do you have that? Okay. Now, this all fits together, Paul. The reason that you can have a minimum and hold to it is because you're delivering something special. You tell me almost every month now that somebody you've brought in or referred you to, and they like your, the reason is they like your service model. So here's, remember, the question starts, you know, the picture I painted for you, you've gotten a referral, you walk in to the referral's office, she's sitting behind her desk, you make small talk, and then you start to get into your pitch, and she says, "Oh, hold on here. I'm busy, Paul. You're busy. Let's cut to the chase. why should I do business with you? That's everybody you get in front of, you would really like to have that question asked. What do? You confirm that you heard the question. I'm glad, Ms. Jones, that you asked me that. Let me tell you why you should be in my practice. And if you start talking about alpha and beta and being a great mutual fund or stock picker, you're dead. You say, let me tell you about my practice. I have a concierge practice for a limited number of people. My practice is planning driven. I have a formal investment process. And it's all wrapped by unparalleled service. That's what my clients get, not what they're going to get. This is what my clients get. And, Paul, you know from experience that those 4 points, concierge practice, planning-driven, investment process, unparalleled service, people aren't getting that. So we never want you to badmouth the competition. This is what you do. I don't know what Joe Jones at Merrill Lynch does, but this is what you do. So that's the base. I started to send you all this clip the other day, and I didn't. You remember the Indiana Jones movie where he's in some Middle Eastern market, and this guy comes out with a big old sword, and like he's going to shoot him.
Yeah,
and he pulls out the pistol. Well, he had a lot of confidence. If there's something else way off the subject, that was supposed to be a fight. I mean, in the movie, and last for a while. Harrison Ford had stomach problems, and he didn't have much time to devote to the scene. He pulled that gun out of his pocket and shot the guy completely. It's something he made up right on the spot. So anyway, you got a gun. You bring a gun to a knife fight here. You've got the biggest battleship on the sea. So now let's go to the next page. And here's how you – the confidence is so, so important. So brand accountability. I have a concierge practice for a limited number of people. And then on the left-hand side, you don't have to use this. This is could be used as an example. What do you believe? If you believe something, it gives you confidence. What do I believe? We can't deliver concierge practice with too many clients. We have a minimum for new business. We always want to have room in our practice for new clients to mirror our best clients. All of that. So those are things, let's pretend you say, those are the things I believe. And then if those are your beliefs, do your actions match your beliefs? What do you do? I mean, are your actions hitting each of these points that in this example that you believe? You with me?
Yes.
Okay. So again, why a client wants to give you a $35,000 referral, and you say, well, as you remember, I have a minimum of $500,000, unless there are extenuating circumstances. Now, the reason I do that is I can't deliver the type of service that I offer to my clients with too many, if I get too many clients. I can never let the growth of my practice compromise the service I give you. You get this page?
I do, yes.
Okay, let's go to the next page. Planning. What do we believe? Every client gets a plan, and I'm not going to go through each one of those because they got a couple other things I want to cover. But if you believe every client gets a plan, and you've got people in your practice who you've never had a planning conversation with, you're not really living your brand, correct?
Can you teach me something about that? If I have clients that are high net worth, and they're saying, I don't need planning, I think I'm covered, I'm good.
Yeah.
And what are we doing with them? Can we use common sense and just say, yeah, you're probably right?
No.
But let's do it anyways. You're probably right, but let's do it anyways and make sure that that we're not missing anything?
You can go in and Google for wealthy people who died without a will. I mean, you know, Elvis Presley, going on and on. So you don't want to dismiss what they're telling you. So you've got to, what do? You validate that you heard them. And you say, Ms. Jones, I'm really glad you have done that. And then you look at, there are lots of parts to a plan. People say there are a lot, you ask the questions again. I keep referring to what we talked about in the past. How often is, I've already put together a plan and a will. How often is it, I'm glad you've done that. How often is it reviewed? And has it been fully implemented? Those questions you always want, you're going to have people say, almost everybody would love to have a plan. They don't want to go through the pain of putting all the information together. It's a matter of time it's a matter of time for them. So, Paul, I'm glad you brought it up, but I've already done that. Well, Ms. Jones, I'm really glad you have. May I ask you a couple of questions? How often is it reviewed? And has it been fully implemented? Because part of your planning process is your people get, that's what your people get. That differentiates you in the planning business. At Merrill Lynch, we did a lot of planning. But I'll tell you, some people, there were times when people would complete a plan for a client. The first thing they'd look at is the asset side of the balance sheet and never revisit the other stuff. Most times your practice is defined on what people get from you other than money management. Everybody offers money management. Could be good, could be bad, but not everybody gets a fully implemented plan. That differentiates you. You got it?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll tell you a story. My son went through a divorce out in California. It was a horror show. And 6 months later, his ex-wife was still the beneficiary of his retirement plan. Now, it's true.
I don't mean to laugh, but I understand. Yeah.
No. But what I'm pointing out to is people can think they've got a plan. I mean, the reason the guy, I'm just going to repeat it with a different story. I'm not going to do it. There are parts of a plan. You don't have to do a whole plan if their will been updated. There are other things that you can, there's more to a plan. You don't have to go through what I'm trying to say. You don't have to go through a full blown plan to address a specific issue. If somebody says to you, I'm good, I'm in good shape, what do you think they're referring to?
Their will.
They're referring to the fact that they're good for retirement. They haven't updated their will. They haven't set up any trust that they may need. They may not have a good CPA. They may need to talk to a high-powered estate planning attorney. So when they say I'm good there, most of them are talking about their ability to live in retirement comfortably. There's a lot more to that. That's what you're addressing when you told me about these life insurance policies. That has nothing to do with investments, but it's part of a plan. So again, you're planning. If somebody already done it, glad you've done it. You confirm what you've heard. You validate what you've heard. How often is you ask these questions separately? How often is it reviewed? And has it been fully implemented? If somebody, so that begs the question, you need to review your plans on a regular basis, and that's either every 6 months or every year. At least every year you need to go through that plan and see if there's anything you need to update. And it's a lot easier to update a plan and build a new one. You agree?
Yeah. I mean, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. So this is how you back up who you are. And when you back up who you are and you know you're doing great work, and you are, that gives you the confidence to be proud of your brand and not violate it by taking in $10,000 accounts, unless there are extenuating circumstances. Got it?
Hey, Rob, can I ask you something?
Yes. Sure.
Only because these schools are, it's the beginning of the year, and these schools are all on top of me right now. You think I should go get my CFP while I'm still young and able to comprehend anything?
That's a loaded question. I got my CFP in like 1981. I mean, my CFP number was only four digits. It made me a better FA immediately. Immediately.
Wow.
Because back in the 80s, you probably don't remember, you all are too young, interest rates were through the roof. Sure, 6 month treasury bills were like 15%. And what it taught me right off the bat was the power of compounding. I knew it intellectually, but I never really took it in. So that's when you were doing a lot. They were doing a lot of zero coupon treasuries. I mean, it was a strange time. It was an interesting time in the business. But what I'm saying, it made me better. You get the CFP for two reasons. Number one, it'll make you better. And number two, it sets you aside. It helps you with your branding. But the most important thing is it makes you better, but the branding doesn't hurt either. Because if somebody says, are you a CFP, you can't answer that positively. So that's my answer. It does take time, but it's worth it. Now, so there are other degrees out there. Like I can't remember what it was. I'm sure if you fish around, you can find it. That were actually the CFP. When I went through the CFP, was six parts, and there was one that was like if you did one part of the CFP, there was a degree that sounds good.
AAMS.
Is that part of the CFP?
Yeah, like if you do the AAMS, it takes care of the whole like investment side of the CFP.
So if somebody says to you, "Are you a CFP?" You can say no. I am a ba 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 ba, which is the investment part of the CFP.
Right.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, let's go to the next page. Formal investment process. Is there a gap between what you believe and what you do? Let's go down to that very last thing under what you believe is the portfolio is rebalanced on an annual basis. Everybody in the business, every client, wants to buy low and sell high. That's what they want to do. Well, you can't guarantee, you can't do that. I mean, in retrospect, you can. Rebalancing is as close as you get to being able to buy low and sell high. What does rebalancing force you to do? It forces you to sell overvalued assets and buy undervalued assets. If you think of going back to last year with the market bottomed like in March. If you had a 50-50 stock and bond split by today, you would be heavier. You'd have more than 50% in equities, right?
Right.
So if you rebalance, that would be bringing your equities down to 50% and using that money to add more fixed income. So it's a part of a formal investment process and a differentiating question. We always want to be asking differentiating questions. Again, we don't want to be negative. Is how often is you're in front of a prospect How often is your plan rebalanced? Is your portfolio rebalanced? And somebody looks at you like you're the craziest man in the world. What are you talking about? And you say, well, and you go through that process. If you talk about things you're doing, remember, when you're in front of a prospect, everything you are telling them is getting filtered through what they're getting now.
Right.
So you talk about balance rebalancing, and they've never done that, or their FA's done it, but has neglected to tell the client what they've done. You're missing a bet. So, and then let's flip to that last page, the easiest of all. It's all wrapped by unparalleled service. What do you believe? You believe every client should receive a monthly scheduled contact. Our clients will receive rapid response. Clients will receive multi-generational and fully implemented planning. That's your service model. Simple. It differentiates you. So, what this gives you, the thing we just went through, is it gives you a way to make sure you're living your brand. And when you live your brand, Paul, you're highly confident when you get out in prospecting traffic. It just, you know, why should I do business with you? You got the answer. This is what I do. This is what you can expect. This is what my clients are receiving now. So, that's that. You got a couple more minutes?
Yeah, please. Yeah, these are good points. I love it.
Okay. Let's just touch a minute on your energy, diet, exercise, sleep. How you doing?
I'm actually doing really well. You know, we're my wife hired a health coach for the family who's focusing on me right now. And, you know, the diet is going really well, and sleep has always been good. That's not a problem. But I would say that the exercise is kicked in, and we've been exercising. So I think it's going really well. Do I sound low energy today?
No, not at all. No, not at all. But I'm not going to assume anything. My wife got me an Apple Watch for Christmas.
Oh, cool.
And one of the things on there, it measures how much you're standing up. Do you have one?
Not presently, but I have had one in the past. Mine, I broke it last year, but yeah, they're nice.
Yeah. Well, this one measures three things, like how much you're standing up, how much exercise you're getting, and just general movement. And last night, after the football game was over, I looked at my watch, and I was real close to getting one of the three stars you get if you get something. And so I walked up and down the steps until it rolled over. But it helped. Isn't that sad?
I'm laughing because I have done it. I have done that same thing.
but it holds me accountable. So it's just, you know, I can feel your energy. I'm sure Suzanne can feel your energy. I feel Suzanne's energy, and your clients and prospects feel it. You know, you get somebody walks in front of a prospect, and they're it looks like they just, you know, about to fall asleep. There's no chirping to them, and they don't get that business. All right. The other thing is game board, really important. Suzanne, what's on your game board right now?
Oh, gosh. Insurance policy. Finish.
Oh, okay. Now let's talk about
the application.
Okay, because we want to be specific. You, how many of those do you have to do? So your task is processing insurance. I don't know if that's the way you would define it, but and how many of those are you working on right now?
We have one that we thought was finished, but there's one more apparently document I have to get, which we weren't aware of, and also a brand new one that I started filling out, so I would like to get that one finished. And this is only the second one I guess the first two were together a couple. So this is an individual. So this is my second time going through this process. So I considered the first one a bumpy learning curve, but this one I would like to have go a lot smoother. So I would like to get that done this week at a, if at all possible, get it submitted.
Okay. All right, good. Paul, what's on your game board?
Financial plan. I'm trying to get a financial plan finished for the Murphys. So my priority is getting that done and finished by the end of the week.
Okay. Don't forget. The beauty of the game board, folks, is you know what's the most important thing to get done. If you make a list of 10 things. My MO was I'd always do the easiest one, and sometimes I didn't get around to the most important. When there's only one or two things on your game board, it's kind of hard to hide from those. So you're good with the game board. I've got almost everything covered. I'm going to talk a little bit about the practice overview. Get that moving, because the ideal thing for you is we're talking about what's your brand, how you deliver it, how you hold yourself accountable. I want that you to be able to leave something with a prospect, leave something with a client, so they can remember who you are. I want your clients to be able to describe you to their friends, not just Paul's a good guy, you'll really like him. It's he has monthly scheduled contact, he has a great service model, blah, blah, blah. I want you to be able to leave that behind. People have sometimes people put together a pitch book for a client, and what happens is they leave that for a client to read, and guess what? They don't read it because it's too big. So what you want to have, even if you're doing a pitch book, is you want to have a copy of your practice overview in there, so the clients will read a one page. You've seen it. I sent you an example the other night. You know, it's one page. It's bullet points. People will read that. Now you got to get that approved by compliance. So I always want to be friends with compliance. So what I'd like for you to do, keep that for next time. Keep that game board up to date. Share it with each other. You can hold each other accountable. And I would like you to take that piece we spent a lot of time with, that brand accountability, and just if there are things that under the what we believe, if there are things, again, those are just examples. You're welcome to use all of them, none of them. But I want you to be able to always check and hold yourself accountable around your service model. We good?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, I questioned this in my own head recently. I had a client that asked me for something, and she needed to know like the cost basis of something she had bought in her mother's account, but her mother had passed away, and it just was a big, you know, we had to like go back into the archives to figure it out. Mm-hmm. And it took, you know, 3 or 4 days because I had to go to the home office to get them to go back into the archives. And I was thinking in the back of my head, if I'm telling people that, you know, I'm acknowledging within an hour and then I'm trying to resolve the issue within 24 hours, you know, this turns into an extenuating, you know, it turns into a situation where I have to, I'm sorry, Rob.
I know your question. It's a good question. It's a really good question. Not as good as Suzanne's earlier, but close. There are things that you can't get done in 24 hours. It's just, it's impossible. You got to go to the home office. You got to do whatever. You got to mail it to the insurance company, whatever. So, Here's how you do it. You do it, and you reinforce your brand while you do it. Ms. Jones, I'm happy to get that done for you. As you know, part of my service is a 24-hour response. something like this takes some digging at the home office. I won't be able to get that done in 24 hours, but either Suzanne or I will keep you apprised of the progress. Now,
okay,
what have you done? You've reinforced your brand, and you've set expectations. And what Ms. Jones will say in this example is, oh, that's fine. I wouldn't expect 24 hours. But you've addressed it up front. You've set expectations, and you keep them apprised. You don't have to call them every day, but you keep them apprised. Ms. Jones, remember you asked me last week about getting these back prices for your mom's estate. I'm still working on it. I'm almost to where I need to be. Just wanted to keep you apprised. That's another positive touch with a client.
Absolutely. Yeah, that sounds good.
How'd that do? Is that okay?
Yeah, I like it. I like it a lot.
Good. Good.
Yeah.
All right. Good to talk with you. Keep doing what you're doing.
You too, Rob. We'll talk to you next month.
Thank you.
Thank you. And I'll work on all these templates that you sent me, and I'll pull it all together. Thank you very much.
Okay. Well, next time we talk, I will be calling you from Florida. We go to Florida for the month of February. So I'll hold it over your head. I'll say I'm looking at it at the Gulf of Mexico while you're not. Okay.
Yeah, well, hey, Suzanne, cancel our call for next month.
No.
Yes.
No. All right.
All right, Rob. Take care, buddy.
See you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.